The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, where today we're going to do our best to answer your questions. I have to correct one thing the intro lady said, though. It's not Jim and Chris today. It's just Chris. It's the Chris solo show today. Jim is out of town in Dallas at another Ed Slott IRA training session, so I'm sure next week he'll bring back all kinds of nuggets of knowledge to share with us on the show. But today's show, because it's just me running solo, I figured we'd knock out a handful of Social Security questions, since that's kind of my forte in the office here, and we're a little behind on Social Security questions. So today will mostly be a Social Security question and answer session. So we'll start with a fairly simple one here. And let me grab it. It starts off, let's see, they're from California. So we, of course, refer to everyone as George on the show. But from California, says they're trying to create a My Social Security account online so I can request a replacement Social Security card. After trying three times, it is now suspended and I can't complete the process for an account. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong, as I verified the address and that I'm using. What else could it be? They go on to say, do I need to create an account in order to get a replacement card without going into a Social Security office? Well, I can't tell you for sure what the problem is, but there's a couple common problems. One you claim to have addressed, which is you're not using the right information for them to verify. When you go to ssa.gov and click on the, I think it's My Account or My Social Security. It's a big button on the home page there, and they've changed it a few times over the years. But when you click on that to set up an account, they want to make sure it's you, so they're going to ask you a series of security questions that they verify via the public credit reporting agencies. And obviously, when they ask you things about like your address or past addresses you used or employers or things you've owned in the past or places you've borrowed money from, if any of those are mismatched, they're going to tend to be suspicious of you creating an account in someone else's name or claiming to be someone you're not. So it's important, first of all, to make sure you're using accurate information. You claim you are, so says you're using the right address. So the other common thing that we see is that in this day and age, it's due to identity theft. A lot of people have frozen their credit reports. They put a lock, essentially, on those credit reporting agencies. And those credit reporting agencies then won't respond to requests for information until you unlock your credit report. So when Social Security goes to verify the information they're asking in this process, if they can't access it, sometimes it will fail the process, and then you won't be able to set up an account. So I would make sure that's not the case. If you're not frozen on your credit reports and you're sure you're using the right information, which at this point it's a bit moot for this person, because once you try enough times, they lock it out until you talk to them, essentially. And I found the best way to do that is to go into the Social Security office itself with good identification, like a passport, maybe your Social Security card, driver's license, you know, as official of a documentation as you can get, the better it will be. And they should be able to get it reset for you so that you can get the account set up. So I don't think in this case you're going to be able to get a replacement Social Security card without going into the office. But your other option would be to give Social Security a call on their customer service line. And let me look that up real quick. I don't have it memorized. So as we'll give it to you right here on the show. We've got, they won't give you the phone number to your local office, unfortunately, but they'll give you the phone number for just kind of general customer support here. Let's see. They don't make it real simple. There we go. Contact us. So their phone number, there we go. Got to click it several times. There we go. So 800-772-1213 is the phone number for Social Security. That won't get you to your local office, but it'll get you to a customer service representative. And maybe they will allow you to do some things on through that phone call, like request a replacement card. They'll likely send it to the last known address that you've got. So if you've moved, that might be a problem. But you might try that if you absolutely don't want to go into your local office. So wish you good luck on that. Unfortunately, talking directly to a Social Security agency person is going to be the only way to resolve that issue. So moving on to the second question here, also from California, actually. And their question is, am I eligible for 1 or 6 months of retroactive Social Security retirement benefits under the following circumstances? So let me first describe what they're asking, in case those of you who might be new to Social Security are unaware. Once you reach your full retirement age, whatever that might be, 66 or 67 or somewhere in between, depending on the year that you were born, you are able to file for retirement benefits retroactively with certain limitations. Retroactively just means I'm going to go in and file for benefits, but I'm going to ask them to backdate the application so that I can collect benefits for months that have already gone by. They give you this opportunity so that if you maybe forget to go in or something is delayed and you want to catch up and you wished you'd claimed a few months ago, they allow you to backdate the application. Now, the limitations are you first have to be your full retirement age. Before your full retirement age, you're not able to file a retroactive application. Once you reach your full retirement age, they'll allow you to backdate the application back to your, well, how should I say this? Up to 6 months. That's the maximum, but it's limited to being back to your full retirement age month. So if you're full retirement age plus 1 month, you can't file retroactively 6 months. You can only go back the 1 month. But once you've gone 6 months past your full retirement age month, you're able to go in and apply retroactively. And the way they will pay that out to you, they will turn on your benefits, which will start in a month or two, and they will also send you a lump sum of those 6 months that you missed effectively when you didn't file, but you backdated the application. So that's what this person is talking about, is filing for retroactive benefits. So let's now look at the circumstances that they list. First, they were born in 1947 with a full retirement age in 2013. So clearly, they're past their full retirement age. And not only past, they're way past the 6 months past the full retirement age. So with just that nugget of information, normally you would say that yes, they could file up to 6 months retroactively. Next thing, I was released from incarceration in January of 2019. Now, that changes the story completely at this point. And the reason is when you're incarcerated, you're not eligible to receive Social Security benefits. So since retroactive claiming is essentially just backdating the application, they're pretending like you came in 6 months ago and filed. That's a problem in this particular case. The third thing they say is they applied for Social Security benefits in March of 2019, and the officer told them that the Social Security officer told them that the March and April benefits will be paid in May. And then they go on to ask, does the incarceration affect my ability to claim retroactively? And unfortunately, it does. Because 6 months ago, or 6 months prior to March when you went in, you were incarcerated, they won't let you backdate your application to then, because all they're doing is they're pretending you came in then. Well, if you had approached them 6 months before while you were incarcerated, they would have said, no, you can't file for benefits yet. Since you were released in January, you were eligible for benefits in February. So you are right in their first statement when it says, am I eligible for 1 or 6 months? Someone probably told them, well, you could pick up February. You could get your 1 month when you weren't incarcerated. So it's true, you could retroactively claim that February payment, but unfortunately, you're not going to be able to claim, to the best of my knowledge, maybe there's some arcane exception, but I don't believe that's true. You have to be eligible to file when you want to retroactively date the application itself, and in this case, incarceration barred that. So I think only February is going to be eligible for you to retroactively claim. Otherwise, you'll just pick up in March when you first filed and move forward with your benefit as of March of 2019. So that was one we haven't run across on the show before. Not a very common occurrence, but hopefully that helps those people out. Next question. This is a WEP-based question, meaning windfall elimination provision. This emailer is from Ohio, so we don't have another California here. We've got Ohio. And their story starts as follows. This one's a little longer story. 12 years ago, 2007, at age 50, I became a state of Ohio employee and have not paid into Social Security since then. I had 27 years of substantial earnings prior through 2007. So for those of you who don't know, there are certain employers, mostly governments, government employers, that are able to opt out of the Social Security system and replace it with something somewhat, I don't want to say equivalent, they're very different programs, but something that's acceptable as a replacement. They can get special approval to opt out of Social Security and have an alternative retirement plan, and they then are released of the burden themselves and the employee from paying into the Social Security system. So that's what they're referring to when they say they've become a state of Ohio employee and stopped paying into Social Security. The comment about 27 years of substantial earnings refers to the fact that prior to going to the state of Ohio for employment, they worked in a job that did pay into Social Security and paid into Social Security in a, quote, substantial way. That's going to be a key fact coming up here in a moment when I get to the second part here. So the second part, since I'm 62 in 2019, if I went back into employment covered by Social Security, could I pick up 3 more years of substantial earnings to lower the effect of the windfall elimination provision on my Social Security benefit? Your recent podcast on the Social Security PIA calculation led me to conclude the answer is no. So let me address that. Let's talk about windfall elimination provision. So when you have non-covered employment, meaning employed, in this case, the state of Ohio, where he's not paying into Social Security, that subjects his Social Security benefit that he earned at other jobs to possibly being reduced by something called WEP, W-E-P as in Paul, windfall elimination provision. We've talked about it before on the show, and if you want a more detailed explanation, I'd encourage you to go to our podcast, which is helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. I have lots of posts about WEP on there. But in a nutshell, it's a way for them to alter the formula for calculating your retirement benefit to take into consideration that you're not really as low income a worker as it appears from your earnings record. And what I mean by that is when you're not paying into Social Security, it looks like you don't have any earnings according to Social Security, when in fact you do at maybe a great job at the government, in this case, the state of Ohio. And the way the formula for your benefit is set up, it is weighted to help lower wage earners more than higher wage earners. That's just the way it's set up. So the problem is without this WEP reduction, some people would look like they're low wage earners when you look at their earnings record, but in fact, maybe they were very high wage earners. And so they have this reduction factor, if you will, that is WEP. And in 2019, which is when I'm recording this, the WEP reduction is $463 per month. So if you work at all in a job that doesn't pay into Social Security, but you also do have a Social Security benefit from a second job, a different job, that Social Security benefit will be reduced by $463 a month. Even if you work one day in the non-Social Security job. Now, the protection you have if you work a very short period, in my extreme example, a day, is that they promise to not reduce your Social Security benefit more than half of your pension that you're earning at the non-Social Security job. Well, of course, you're not going to earn much of a pension in just one day. So in my extreme example, the WEP wouldn't apply. But a lot of people think WEP is based on how much your pension is. Has nothing at all to do with it. The only time the pension amount comes into play is when you're worried about this protection of keeping the WEP not offsetting more than half of your pension. So people with really small pensions, this is an issue. But if you've worked substantially in a non-Social Security job, your pension is going to be much higher than the WEP offset. So you're going to be subject to the full WEP offset of $463 per month. That's for somebody turning 62 in 2019. With that being said, they do have an adjustment for WEP. And that adjustment gives you credit for years of substantial earnings in the Social Security system. And this gets back to this person's question when he made the comment that he had 27 years of substantial earnings in Social Security. Well, the reason why he pointed that out is that if you have less than 20 years of substantial earnings, you are fully impacted by WEP, that full $463 per month in 2019. However, if you have 30 years of substantial earnings in the Social Security system, WEP goes away completely, even if you have one of these non-covered pensions like he's describing with the state of Ohio. And it kind of phases out between 20 and 30. So at 27 years, he's well on his way to avoiding WEP. Specifically, with 27 years of substantial earnings, which he has right now, the WEP offset for him isn't $463. It's only $138.90. Now, that's per month. Now that's money he'd prefer to have. And that gets to his proposal. Could I pick up three more years of substantial earnings to, he says, lower the effect? It would eliminate the effect of WEP on his benefit. And the answer is yes. He said he listened to a podcast of ours and came away thinking, no, you couldn't. And I think the reason is your PIA or retirement benefit is officially calculated when you turn 62. But they don't ignore earnings after that. If earnings happen after you turn 62, they will reassess the situation every year in January and make any appropriate adjustments. So if you have substantial earnings years after you turn 62, my full understanding, and I've never seen anything to disagree with this, if someone knows of some strange rule that prevents this, let me know. But any years of substantial earnings by the Social Security definition, which I was going to pull up just to give people a sense of what are substantial earnings. Let me Google. This is a little harder when Jim's not here talking it up. Let's see here. Got it right here. So substantial earnings in 2019 is $24,675. So as long as if you were to earn that in 2019, that would count as one of those 30 years of substantial participation that you'd like to get to eliminate WEP. So he's got a lot of it eliminated at 27, and if he could somehow find a job that paid at least that, we'll round it up to $25,000, it goes up every year with inflation. But that's the number, his target number, to have a year count to exclude him from the WEP offset. Now, I would propose, I wouldn't focus only on this. I would look at, you know, how much time am I going to spend? Is it a job I want to do? Is it really going to make that much difference for me? Those types of things. So he'll have to decide, is the job and all that extra work worth avoiding the $138 a month? Might very well be. Just depends on the rest of his circumstances. But yes, he could work three more years earning substantial earnings in the eyes of the Social Security Administration and actually get to that magical 30-year mark where he would not be affected by WEP in any way, even though he had that Ohio State pension. Okay, last question. This is an interesting one as well, one we haven't really had before. So last question is from North Carolina. So we're kind of all over the country today. Good afternoon. I ran across your site while trying to help a CPA friend with their client's case. I represent individuals in Social Security disability claims. I've researched Social Security regs and online sites and have gotten more good and understandable info from your site. I think that's because we write things in English instead of in government ease, if you will. But the regulations are very, very confusing, and they use a lot of odd language in there. So I can certainly empathize with the having trouble deciphering things. So on to their question. The client is 58 and worked from 2015 to February of 2019, only very remote work before then, so just very little work before then, apparently. So they have 16 quarters paid in, and they need 20 for disability, to qualify for disability. Now, what are quarters? Quarters refer to earning credits within the Social Security system, and you have to earn money participating in Social Security every year, and you can earn up to 4 credits per year. They used to be called quarters, and in a lot of documentation, they still refer to it as quarters because you used to earn 1 every quarter or every 3 months that you had earnings. They changed how they calculated a while back, and I forget the year. It was quite some time ago, where they don't actually make you earn money in every quarter of the year to get 4 of them. They found that was very unfair to seasonal workers. But they still have this, the foundation of this idea is still based on quarterly occurrence. So you can earn up to 4 per year. You need 40 quarters in order to qualify for a retirement benefit. In this case, this particular person, we don't talk a whole lot about disability on here. In this particular case, they're going to qualify if they get to 20, and they only have 16. So they're pretty close. They're only a year away. It says, goes on to say, she's self-employed, and the CPA projects she will earn about $13,000 by June. She is incorporated and is paid in disbursements. Not super important for this. Can she pay for 4 quarters now? Or in other words, recognize income, pay herself through her corporation, so she's an employee of the corporation. Can she recognize earnings of $1,360 times 9? I'm not sure why it says times 9. Should be times 4. So that she becomes insured for disability. The $1,360 number, by the way, in order to earn a quarter of coverage or a credit of coverage in 2019, you have to have $1,360 worth of earnings. Not a whole lot. So in order to earn 4 quarters in a year, you've got to have 4 times the 1360, which is going to be, 5240. So 5240, she just had a typo in here because she did have the 5240, but she said it was times 9. It's actually times 4 to get to the 5240. So 5440. My bad. 5440 in a year would get you the 4 credits. So sounds like she's on the right track so far, but there's a little issue I'm already detecting here, but let's go on. So and she continues, so that she becomes insured for disability. Even though she has recently stopped working, She's been told by the local Social Security office that she cannot because she doesn't have the credits, but your site indicates she can. Well, let me clarify. There's one little glitch in this whole scenario, and that glitch is, even though years ago they removed the requirement that you earned that $1,360 per credit in each quarter, in other words, in the first quarter of the year, you'd have to earn $1,360 to get that credit, and then in the second quarter, you'd have to earn $1,360 or more to get that credit, and so on. That rule is how it used to be. Now, and again, for decades now, they will look, and if you've got the $5,440 in the year, doesn't matter when you earn it, could all be on January 1st, and you get all four credits for the year, except they still technically award them to you on a quarterly basis. You must be alive at least one day in the quarter for which you are being awarded a credit in order to get the credit. And the reason why I emphasize being alive is the way I figured this out, I didn't figure it out, I discovered this issue, is that we had someone whose spouse had 39 or 38, it was high 30s credits of coverage. So they didn't quite make a retirement benefit. But then in this final year that they were alive, they were going to earn, and they earned by March plenty, tens of thousands of dollars. So they easily earned enough to get the four credits. But they were denied, then they died. And the surviving spouse went in to file for a survivor benefit, and they told her no, she couldn't have it. And she says, wait a minute, he only needed four more credits, and he earned plenty before he died in order to earn the four credits for the year. And they said no, and they didn't do a good job explaining it. So I dug into it and found the issue was not only does he have to earn enough money to earn the four credits, he has to be alive January 1st, which is the first day of the first quarter. He has to still be alive April 1st to get the second credit for the second quarter. He has to be alive July 1st and has to be alive October 1st, which is the first day of the fourth quarter. So even though he'd earn enough money by like March, I think he died in July, if I remember correctly. All he had to do was live until October 1st to get that fourth quarter, and he would have then been eligible for a retirement benefit, which would then have unlocked the survivor benefit for her, but she instead got nothing. It was one of the most tragic cases of bad timing I've ever been exposed to. He ended up with 39 credits of coverage, which denied her a survivor benefit for the rest of her life, which was, like I said, he was the breadwinner. It was sad beyond belief. So back to this story. I think the same thing's going on here. Even though she's going to recognize the full $5,440, which would give her four credits for the year, they're not officially going to grant her that fourth credit until October 1st of this year. So the good news is, I believe, and maybe sometimes rules with disability are a little bit unique. Well, a little bit. They're sometimes beyond unique into the bizarre category. But my belief is that if she were to wait until October 1st, she then would have the credits required, the 20 credits, to qualify for disability, and then she could move forward. The Social Security Agency is probably not telling her this because they're just typing it in the computer, and the computer's saying no and is not explaining why. And this is such a bizarre rule that I'm not shocked that the person that they're talking to didn't just come out and describe it like this. But I'm guessing this is the issue that they're running into, is that you have to be alive at least one day in each quarter in order to earn the credit for that quarter in the coverage credits calculation. So hopefully that clarifies it. Hopefully that's all that it is. I can't imagine. It goes on. She unfortunately has cancer and wants to apply for disability if possible. I think she'll be able to under this described scenario in October. But this one, I'm going to reach out to this person. I hope they email back with the conclusion of this story, because I would love to hear how this resolves itself, because this is again, kind of like the incarceration email, one we've never had before. This is one that is I have not run across, other than how it's kind of related to that survivorship denial that I described in my previous story. So, well, that's it. Those are four really good questions, actually, on Social Security. Glad we were able to clean those up. If you've got your own questions, we encourage you to reach out to us. Just go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. You can also go to chrishelps.com. That should direct you over to the same spot. But Jim started this show here, so we kind of use his website address typically. I'm going to check it real quick on my computer and see if it still goes. It does. Okay, so Chris Helps. On this show, since Jim's not here, we'll advertise chrishelps.com. That's chrishelps.com. And you can see a description of what we do here. We specialize in retirement planning. There's a contact button on here. You can connect with us via either submit a form with a question. You can reach out to email us. You can call us the old-fashioned way. Any of those are ways to communicate with us. We'd love to have your questions on really anything retirement-related we try to get to on the show. Today was focused on Social Security, but we deal with Social Security issues, a lot of IRA questions, IRA, Roth IRA, IRA conversions, mistakes you make with your IRA, 401Ks, 403Bs. We talk about what we call our secure retirement income process, which is the way that we like to approach retirement planning. And any questions related to really any of those, we'd love to get from you. So we also want to remind everybody that we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in Northern Colorado, but we help clients throughout the whole country. If you think we can help you, reach out on that same website, Jim Helps or chrishelps.com. And you can schedule what's called a coffee and a second opinion, where we can sit down over the phone for 20, 30 minutes and talk about what you're needing assistance with. We'll describe what services we offer, and if those two things coincide and are a good match, we can move forward. Otherwise, we can hopefully direct you to someone who can help you with your particular situation. So we really appreciate everybody listening, and hope you enjoyed the show today. And we'll be back next week, I'm sure, with Jim, with all kinds of shared exciting stories from the Ed Slot program. So my guess is we'll be handling a whole bunch of IRA questions, IRA-related items on the next show. So everybody have a good week. Thanks for joining us. See you later.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.